This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Former Saturday Night Live writer and performer Al Franken has a new sitcom that premieres next Tuesday after Frasier on NBC. It's called Lateline, and it's set behind the scenes at a late-night network news show. Lateline was described in People magazine as the funniest new series of the 97-98 season. Franken not only stars in the series, he co-created the show and co-produces it with John Marcus. Franken was one of the original writers on Saturday Night Live and worked on the show for about 15 years. The character he became best known for was Stuart Smalley, the New Age self-help cable TV host. Franken is also the author of the best-selling book of political satire called Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. On Lateline, Franken plays Al Freundlich, the chief correspondent for the show, who has his eye on the anchor chair. I asked Franken to describe his character.
Well, I'm sort of the show putz. Freundlich is the chief correspondent, and he's a good correspondent, but he is not very self-aware, and he's an intellectual, or he thinks he is, and he's actually pretty smart, but and he kind of thinks he's sort of the carrier of the keeper of the Edward R. Murrow torch. But he doesn't have very good people skills. And when we went down the Nightline, what I discovered, one of the key relationships at Nightline, and in any news bureau I discovered because we went to other places, was that of the producer with the correspondent. And we heard a lot of stories from producers about high-maintenance correspondents. So I wanted to make Freundlich a very high-maintenance correspondent. But he's kind of a pure character in an odd way. He feels very passionate about what he does. And as a result, he's willing to spend 20-hour days on stories when 8 hours would be fine or 12 hours would be fine. As a result, his producer, Gail Ingersoll, who's played by Megan Price, is sort of saddled with this guy and is becoming what... Actually, Peter Jennings gave John and I this term, a news nun.
Right, yes. He gives her a whole lecture about how she's becoming a news nun.
Yeah, Freundlich
does, right.
Yeah.
Right. So why do you seem to particularly enjoy playing someone who thinks they're very great and attractive and smart when really they're foolish and always missing the point?
I like playing... Somebody compared the character to Stuart in an odd way, which is sort of...
To Stuart Smalley.
I like someone who's passionate about something, and that sometimes maybe his passion blinds him, but it's at least a sort of a pure impulse. So he's the kind of guy, you know, he feels that the wall between news and entertainment has been eaten away like the cartilage in David Crosby's septum, which isn't fair because mainly he freebased, but the point is still the same, which is Freundlich feels that there's just too much entertainment in the news. So you'll see in our shows that he tends to go for the stories that he feels are important and that people should know about. And there's a tension there between that and the executive producer, played wonderfully by Miguel Ferrer, who is more realistic and understands that you need ratings and you need shows, you need kick-ass TV.
Now, over the years, you've gotten to see how politicians react to jokes about them, because you've been in the position of talking about politicians for many years in sketches and on stage. And I think it was in 1996 you were performing at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and mm-hmm. said something that made Newt Gingrich really angry with you. What did you say?
Well, I said a lot of things probably that made him angry with me, but because I made fun of him. And it turns out he's thin-skinned. But there was one thing he fixed on, which kind of amazed me, and I think it was kind of tactical on his part. I told this joke, which is, I said that, you know, Newt's is nothing if not a man of ideas, some of which get him in trouble. For example, his gender theories. He had said about a year ago at that time in his course, he said that if serving in the military means being in a ditch for 30 days, women have trouble being in a ditch for 30 days because they get infections. So I said, this conjured up an image to me of Newt explaining to his daughter that she, when she was 13, that she had just gotten her first infection. So I, and this is like, I told like 10 jokes about Newt that night. A lot of Air Force One stuff, you know, a lot of stuff that I'm sure he didn't like. So I went down to grab my table, and my wife was at a table with some of my friends, and the speaker was at the next table. So I was standing about 5 feet from him, and I thought it would be kind of like a snub if I didn't say something. So I went up to him. I said, I hope you took everything I said in good fun. And he was really mad, like smoke was coming out of his ears. And he said, well, I think you went over the line. And I said, really? What joke do you think went over the line? He said, the thing about my daughter. And I couldn't remember saying anything about his daughter because I didn't think of that joke as a joke about his daughter.
It was a joke about him.
I thought it was a joke about him and his patronizing attitude toward women and his not, and the seeming confusion of, well, you know what the joke is. So anyways.
Can you explain the punchline now? I'm just kidding.
Well, no, yeah. I ended up explaining it to him about 5 times. Yeah. So he got really, he said, I said, I don't remember telling a joke about your daughter. And he said, the infection. I said, oh, well, that wasn't about your daughter. That was about your attitude toward women. That was about you confusing menstrual 30 days in a ditch. Women can't do it because they get infections. And if infections in 30 days sounds like you're confusing it with a period. And he said, I almost went up there and punched you. I went, oh, no. I said, no. This wasn't about, I don't know your daughter. I don't know anything about her. This was not about your daughter. I don't know. And then he kind of went away, and then I was going to a cocktail party afterwards, the VIP cocktail party, and I ran into him again, and I took him by the shoulders, and I said, I'm sorry if you were offended, but let me explain it again. And I explained the joke again, and he finally kind of said, okay, I got it. So that was it.
Well, I guess you're lucky you don't have to explain the joke that many times to your audience.
It is interesting to try to dissect a joke to someone who's really angry at you.
Ooh, and who's the subject of the joke.
And who's the Speaker of the House.
So, yeah, right, right. Did this make you any more reticent about telling jokes about politicians when the politicians are in the room?
No, what it did tell me was that you can't give someone an excuse to find some element of your joke to take offense at and either misconstrue it either deliberately or unintentionally.
Oh, so, but to get themselves off the hook by saying, oh, that Al Franken,
well, it was like, you can come after
my daughter. Yeah,
yeah, you can come after me, but stay away from my kids.
Right.
He actually said that to me.
Well, would you have rewritten the joke if you knew then what you know now?
I did. I had this became a little bit of a controversy or something, and a reporter from the New York Post called me up and said, why did you do that joke? I said, I explained to her the joke. And Deborah Oren. And then I said, well, I probably would, you know, I would have retold it as, if I had to do it over again, I'd say, Newt said that if being in a ditch for 30 days means that a woman can't be in the army because a woman gets an infection every 30 days, the punchline would have been more, this was a handy information because my daughter just turned 13 and I would have explained, my daughter just turned 13 and I explained to her that she had just gotten her first infection.
Right.
So I would have made my daughter, and Deborah Oren goes, well, why didn't you do that? And I said, because I didn't know. The joke was not about his daughter. So this is like for months after this, I would tell this story. This is interesting that you've recalled the story because I've really not told the story in a long time because I was obsessed with trying to explain what a joke is and what the purpose of a joke is.
My guest is Al Franken. His new sitcom, Lateline, premieres Tuesday on NBC. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Al Franken is my guest, and he has a new sitcom that's called Late Line. It's a satire of late-night news shows like Nightline, and it premieres Tuesday.
It's not really a satire.
No,
it's a,
what would you call it?
It's a sitcom. It's sitcom. An ensemble sitcom. I think okay. We're more... The reason I stop you on that is that...
You wanted to hurt my feelings and put me down in a public setting.
Yeah, because it really is a satire, but I just want it. No, it's because I think if people hear that it's a satire, they're going to think, or a spoof, or a parody, or anything, they're going to expect something different, which is maybe they're going to expect a half-hour presentational show that's actually a parody of Nightline. This is a very about 6 months ago or 8 months ago, I ran into Mary Tyler Moore, and she said, Al, what are you up to? And I said, yet another ripoff of your show.
Right.
And she said, well, there can't be too many, can there? And so that's what we are. I mean, we're an ensemble comedy, and the people we have writing on it, Earl Pomerantz did Mary Tyler Moore and did Cheers and did MASH and did Taxi. He didn't do MASH. He did Taxi. John did The Cosby Show. So this is a sitcom.
I'm sure since you're doing a sitcom about the news and politics that you've been watching CNN a lot lately. And I'm wondering if you've been watching Mike McCurry's White House briefings a lot, and how you would kind of grade him in his ability to deflect questions with humor.
He's done a pretty... He's had a tough job. I wouldn't want the job, but I think he's doing pretty good. Because he basically, to me, the independent counsel has gotten to a whole area that you shouldn't get into, and so the attorney general gave him the right to do it basically, and so we got a kettle of fish here that I don't know how you deal with. I don't know how you deal with it if you're McCurry. And I since we're doing a show about the press, I've noticed that you saw the feeding frenzy, you saw a kind of rush to judgment, and a lot of people are critical of the press, but there are some news organizations that didn't rush to judgment, and I'd like to give them credit now. Sailing Magazine, American Grocer Monthly, Jugs, Big Butt, and Hustler's Barely Legal all did not give in the temptation of printing salacious material about the president. But I saw saw a show. Now the press is doing their self-flagellation stage, and I saw actually on C-SPAN last night something from the Shorenstein Center on the Press. Marvin Kalb hosted a roundtable called The Press, Constant Self-Reevaluation, Useful Exercise, or Giant Wankathon. And Marvin came down on the useful exercise side.
Have you been trying to keep up with the Monica Lewinsky story?
Yeah. I get my daily fix of it.
Well, I wonder, as a political comic or a comic who often does political humor, what do you think of the idea of the public basically being asked to visualize the president having oral sex? Do you know what I mean? It's like there's been times when the presidents have been sick, and we've seen pictures of the presidential colon on TV as mm-hmm. like the surgeon explains the president's condition, and you
usually
wonder, like,
it isn't
do
really
I want to know about this?
Colon.
It's a diagram.
Of it. Yeah.
That's right. It's a diagram of a colon.
Yeah.
But the public is basically being asked to think in very
graphic
terms. Yes, about the president, and I wonder what that makes you think about.
Well, as a comedian, you just want to stay away. I want to stay away from it. I don't.
Why do you want to stay away from that?
Because it's too easy. It's basically, there's a lot of basically, it's too easy to do jokes about oral sex, and it's too cheap. But I do a few. You want to hear them? Now, one good thing about it is that. It's forced husbands and wives to discuss frankly what does and does not constitute adultery. For example, my wife has told me that she she believes oral sex is adultery, which I think explains why we haven't had any since we've been married.
No,
see, that's isn't that too easy?
Oh,
no, it
funny.
Depends how you do it. Do an oral sex joke. That, right. I think, is a legitimate oral sex joke.
Now, I don't know where I don't know where you think the line should be drawn for a president between public life and private life, but say that you.
I think they've gone over the line.
Right. So does that mean that as a comic, you shouldn't go over that line too, or do you think that like it's okay to go over that line since it's already been transgressed?
Yeah, I think you can't ignore it. It's just like I mean, to some extent, people aren't blaming the media, blaming it for a lot of this, the reporting of it. But it's an important story. The Independent Counsel is investigating this, and that's an important story. And then as a comedian, you sort of have a responsibility to address it. I try to address it by talking a little off the obvious, or a little off the, you know, it's the oral office or that kind of, you know, that kind of joke.
Right, right. When you watch C-SPAN, I wonder what you think of Brian Lamb's almost obsessively neutral interviews. I mean, he's so wonderfully fair. And
I love Brian Lamb. I did Washington Journal with him as part of the publicity for the show. I did it a couple days ago. And he's a great foil for a comedian because he has a policy, which is that he can't laugh.
He can't laugh?
No.
Why would that be showing too much subjectivity?
He believes that if he laughed at a joke, that it could be misinterpreted one way or another. As him having some sort of bias. So he has a rule. And I didn't know this. I actually was on a couple years ago to, it was my first appearance to push my book, the Rush Limbaugh book. And I was on with Susan Swain, I think her name is. And I told a joke and I saw her fighting not to laugh. And I'm a comedian and I'm thinking, No. You laugh, that helps. And right. Kind of thing. And she tells me on the air, we have a rule, you can't laugh. So then I realized, and then after the show was over, we explained this Brian Lamb rule that you can't laugh. So I was on with Brian the other day, and it's a very liberating thing as a comedian to know the guy can't laugh. Because then you don't know, and I'm seeing his eyes. He's kind of laughing in his eyes, but he's holding back. So it was really a lot of fun. And I got some great... See, C-SPAN also, you get the best callers. They showed some clips from the show before we started the interview. And the first call was from a woman who said, yeah, I watched those clips, and if you think they're funny, not only are you ugly, but you're stupid. So that was a question for me. So I said, Brian, was that your Republican line? And he said, yes, it was. And then for the rest of the half hour, every caller felt the need to say that they thought I was at least somewhat attractive.
So it must have been really tempting to try to break up Brian Lamb in spite of his policy. I mean, what would happen if he or one of the hosts of a show laughed at one of your jokes? Would they have to, like, resign in shame?
He would fire anyone who... I don't know. He kind of almost cracked a couple times. But it was... he really, really, really cares about C-SPAN's purity and not having any bias and not having any perceived bias. So he really cares about this, and I think that's a great thing.
My guest is Al Franken. Well, your news sitcom... Late Line premieres Tuesday, right after Frasier. That must be a very desirable spot to have because Frasier does very well.
Yes, and also I think we're a pretty compatible audience. It's a very funny show and a smart show. So
are you going to be, having to watch the ratings really carefully? I guess they'll be watched for you.
Yeah, we'll be having our eye on those. Since all our shows are in the can already, we have nothing else to do.
Right.
For next year, but it'll all be the numbers,
So
not all of it, but we've gotten a lot of great critical buzz, so that helps too.
What are you going to do Tuesday night, the night of the debut?
I think I'm just going over to John's house and watching the show with some friends.
John, your co-producer?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Terry.
Al Franken, his new sitcom, Late Line, premieres Tuesday after Frasier on NBC. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.